I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 583. Everybody's gonna die, but not until the next one comes along.
Rinse and repeat.
This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the original.
The fucking original.
Girl Gaming to Gadget and Anime Podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda!
Ninja!
How you doing?
I'm good.
That's good. Good.
Life isn't sucking too bad these days.
You know, that's the thing. When you can get to the place where life is not sucking... Oh, you're doing something right. I don't know what it is, but like you're doing something right.
For the last few weeks of, like, my life, I have been this... There was a picture circulating on Facebook, and it was, like, this jelly, like, this cute little jelly monster, and it's, like, in this protective, like, wall, and it's all, like, I've been protected really long. Maybe I can be a little vulnerable, and it starts to slither itself out, and as it's almost... It's, like, three-fourths of the way out, this giant fist comes and punches it in the stomach, and then you see it back in the wall. It's, like, never again... Never again be vulnerable. And I've been sitting there in that kind of mind frame. But, like, these last few weeks, I've been like, you know what? I can step out a little bit. It's okay. It's okay to get a few scratches and bumps. And granted, I have a giant scratch on my foot because a cinder block decided it wanted to attack me. So, you know, I won't learn the lesson, but I appreciate the journey regardless.
I don't even know how to properly respond to that.
Like, you know, I was stupid, and I Captain Morgan'd when I shouldn't have.
Oh.
I was on the phone at my job. I was taking a break, and I was talking to somebody, and I was getting upset, and I went to go, like, turn on my heel, and I was like, ooh, here's this rock. I'll, like, Captain Morgan and, like, stretch out my leg, and, like, didn't realize that the stone wasn't secure. So it flipped and scratched all the way down the front of my right leg.
Oh,
yeah, it's not pretty.
I thought when you said I Captain Morgan'd when I shouldn't have, I thought that you were actually drinking rum.
No,
when
I meant you the pose. Have. I meant right. The pose.
Got you. Got it.
And I have a horrible scratch all the way down the front, and it's still really sensitive. And I walk in, and, like, my leg is literally, like, rivers of blood. And, like, my team was like, are you okay? I'm like, yes. Does anybody have bacitracin, Neosporin, gauze, maybe a sheep? Does anyone have a sheep I can shear?
Neo.
Like, right quick.
Sporin. And,
but, like, we only had, like, hand sanitizer and, like, Mickey Band-Aids. So, like, I had, like... a really cool, like, makeshift bandage of Mickey Band-Aids over my wound until I could get home and get properly treated for it. But, you know, it's life. Like, the fact that I can laugh about it says a lot about me as a person, I think. So,
You know, and here's the thing. You gotta laugh at stuff, because if you don't, it's gonna kill you. You just gotta laugh.
Yeah. Because if you don't laugh, you'll cry, and you don't want to be crying for the rest of your life.
No, that's not life. I don't know what that is. So, let's move away from morbid stuff. We got a bunch of things to talk about this week on the podcast. Some anime stuff, some game stuff. I'm going to talk about the end of the God of War story game, because I have completed the game. So you know I need to talk about that. I've also got some anime to talk about, I think... Panda, you've got a couple of games that you're actually going to talk about.
Briefly.
Yep.
Two games.
We are not talking about Infinity War.
No, because I have not seen it yet. And by the time this will go live, I will have seen it, but not in time to be able to discuss it on the show.
And in addition, we want to make sure that everybody has a chance, you know, who's listening to this show, has a chance to actually see it before we start talking about it. I do respect that. You know, so many people have been going out of their way to not spoil it for people.
Spoilalicious attacked this week.
Yeah, real hard. Real hard, I saw.
Oh my god. Like,
anyway, so we won't get into it.
I felt like so much
but
shit.
But Spoilerlicious, like, really did.
Well, okay, so one.
Back with a vengeance.
I saw it on somebody else's Facebook, thought it was funny, and shared it.
Look,
and then my
look, guys. Here's what I'm gonna say, okay? Because I don't want to get into it because we'll spoil things for people. When you are sharing memes about currently running shows that you know have become known for their twists, you should be sensitive to the fact that there's probably people that you're friends with on social that maybe haven't seen said twist that you're sharing. However, in your defense, sis, that shit was funny.
Right? Like, it made me bust out, and I was like, I'll just share this. And, like, I'm not going to say what the meme was.
Mm-hmm.
That would spoil stuff.
Yep.
As soon as it went out, like, my husband, the sweet troll that he is.
Yep.
Was like, didn't one of your friends just say she just started? I'm like, oh, no. Like, the dread bile creeped up my throat. And I was like, I totally hated to do it. But then I went and, like, blocked her from seeing that one.
Yeah.
Like, I blocked her. It's good. But then his best man, who's, like, a friend of ours, was like, I was going to watch it because someone told me there were really good twists in the first season. And I was like, shit.
Yep. I was like, so, but in your defense,
it was
that
funny.
Shit was funny.
It was legit hilarious.
It was legit share worthy.
Oh my god. So it's like, I'm like, people have had forever and a day to watch it. And he's just like, you can't do that because some people have. Because
not everybody has the HBOs.
And I'm like, oh, you're right.
Because that's the difficulty. Like, if it had been like a Hulu or Netflixable thing, I would have been like, nah, everybody should have seen it right now. But it is
actually,
it is behind
I'm watching it through Hulu because of HBO.
Right. But
right now everybody has that package. I get
right.
it. But I was like, fuck.
Because not everybody pays for the HBO
yeah.
access on the news.
We do. But anyway, so if you watch Westworld, enjoy Westworld, great, moving on, not talking about it anymore. Do you want me to, I'll take the mic.
I want you to take the mic and, you know, why don't you talk about some stuff? Why don't you bring the mood up? Because I'm going to talk about God of War, so.
Okay, all right then. I think from last week I was talking to everybody about how I was like, two trophies away from finally platinuming Ni No Kuni 2. So update on that. I have, in fact, done it. And the weird sense of accomplishment that I was, like, anticipating didn't come. But no, in a real serious way, the last trophy that I had to get was such a mentally draining experience. So let me break down for you particularly what I mean. So the trophy that I needed to get the platinum trophy was actually called, oh, what a great tie in this, it's called God of War. Because in Ni No Kuni 2, outside of your, you know,
so
open world battles.
Perfect.
Isn't it though? Like it actually is called God of War, so I think that's kind of funny that I bring this up. But outside of your regular, you know, JRPG combat that you have with your party members when like you're in dungeons and stuff, there are also scrimmages which kind of resemble like a top-down RTS style tower defense type of scrimmages that you can play. And in the story, you play about 20 of those or 30 of those in story. And the God of War trophy for Ni No Kuni 2 requires that you win 50 unique scrimmages. And when the game first came out, I think in the first patch, the version 1, you would get flags that would pop up on the world map. They were gold. And you would complete them. And it wouldn't give you any type of indication that you had already done that scrimmage. Until they did a version update where any scrimmages that you completed, the flag, the aura around the flag would be blue, and ones you hadn't done would be gold. So they went and made that correction because people were like, I can't tell which ones I've done versus the ones that I haven't done, and like, this is really annoying, can you fix this, level 5? And level 5 was like, yeah. So they did. At the time that I beat the game, and I beat story by hour 87... So if you are a completionist like me, you can actually complete like gold critical path the game in 50. But if you want to get all the other achievos, you're going to spend some time, like considerably just as much time playing the additional stuff to get those trophies versus the game. I was ripping my hair out for days trying to figure out, because the random scrimmages, you'd have to be flying around in your Zeppelin because you get an airship, duh. Just like you did in Ni No Kuni 1, except in Ni No Kuni 1 it was a dragon. But you get a Zeppelin and you can fly around the world map and you can kind of see the flags from up high. So you would literally have to fly around the world, all the world, to look at the flags that were possibly currently standing. And in most cases, mine were always all blue ones. And I was like, I haven't seen a single gold one. And I would reload my game over and over again. I'd even play some of the simpler blue ones to see if maybe they would pop up a gold one. And then I'd start seeing traction with that. But then even that would begin to plateau. And I was like, I'm not going to get this. Like, I even got to a point where my husband was watching me play, and I'm like, I think I'm not going to be able to critical path this because I can't figure out for the life of me how to conjure these undone scrimmages to pop up. And after he did some immense digging, he found out that some of the scrimmages were like quests, and they built up. So, like, it would be like, Whamster beat down one, and then like if you went around the world and came back, there'd be a new flag and it'd be Whamster beat up two. So like sometimes multiple, the same flag in the same place would be gold, but it wouldn't in fact be the same scrimmage. So it was kind of okay. Like this weird trick, because I'm sitting there and I'm like, there's no way, because I fly around this world all the time, I go through 10 different game sessions, like I don't get it. And finally, like, I finally got it. And usually I'm like, oh my God, I'm so proud of me. I did it. And I was just so mentally and emotionally exhausted because they did not identify or clearly define the rules of that particular trophy, because they have to be unique scrimmages. So you can't just do the same scrimmage 50 times, which, yes, I get that. That's fine. But they should have made it easier to detect scrimmages somehow. And they didn't do that. So, I mean, it's like they kind of set up gamers to not strive to platinum. Which, I mean, it should be something that you feel accomplished by when you do it. Like, when I got my first platinum trophy, I think I got it for Heavy Rain. And I lost my damn mind. Through sheer joy, though. Mm-hmm. Not from anger or anything like that. But I was just like, I really worked hard and really thought through all of that. I deserve this trophy. And I felt like after all the pain I went through, and I literally do feel like some of my grinding in Ni No Kuni 2 was excruciatingly painful. Like, they kind of took a lot of the joy out of it. And I mean, I didn't platinum Ni No Kuni 1. I didn't even come close. I think I only got like 20% of the trophies for that, because I was more engaged with the story. Like, I felt more fulfilled in that than all the backtracking I would have had to do. But like, this Ni No Kuni 2 kind of sets you up to be on this path where you're if you do everything from the story on, like, you have a pretty good footprint of how many trophies you've got. So it kind of plants the seed of, oh, you're really close to platinuming, you should hang on. And then they, like, rake you through the fucking coals on it. And it's just like, I'm disappointed a little bit. And I mean, and I'm working on an article right now because the emotional semblance in this game, the thing that drew me to Ni No Kuni, Wrath of the White Witch, is not present in the second game at all. And I mean, I'm not mad at it. Like, I played it, I enjoyed it, but it pales in comparison to its ancestor, which is really kind of sad, because there's a lot of unique things that are going on in this game that, even with all those innovative things going on, it still doesn't amount to the original, which is kind of disappointing, because you'd think with all that innovation that, like, it would open up this whole new vein, and it doesn't do that. But, like, if someone wants to decently have this debate with me, like, I would strongly appreciate it, because I can't imagine that there aren't other people who don't feel the way I do about it. So that's where I'm at with that, but I did complete it. I'm waiting for my hard copy of God of War to come, because I caved and got a physical disc, because all of my other God of Wars have been physical discs, so I'm a sucker for tradition, so I will not be playing that yet, but you'll hear me talk about that soon. Quickly, I have started a new game that's kind of going to be like a palate cleanser for me between when God of War comes and not. But I've started playing Minecraft on the Xbox.
What?
I know, right?
Wait, what?
Yeah, Minecraft. Minecrafting it up.
You?
Yeah. So funny story about that, because literally I was watching Game Theorists on YouTube, which is like a game theory channel. Hosted by MatPat, who I think has a great voice and does really great theories about games. And his team is also really, really thorough, which I completely appreciate. And sometimes I don't fully agree with their theories, but I do see where they're coming from. Listening to this stuff does kind of make me think outside of my own comfort zone about what I think is possibly happening in games and stuff like that.
Okay.
And I do find myself picking things apart more when I jump into games now more than anything. One of the guys in the game theories, his name's Austin, and he does highly scientifical, yeah, because that's a word.
Yeah, I wasn't going to tell you, but...
Highly scientific, you know, with lots of math. He does lots of math-related videos.
Mathematical is a word.
Mathematical, yeah, mathematically. I'm mathematically challenged, so, you know, whatever. But he was doing a Minecraft video, and I happen to like Austin, too, because he kind of gives me, like, angry video game nerd essence a little bit, like he speaks a little bit, and like it's theatrical but it's poignant, so you're like, okay, I can get past that he's screaming at me for like 40 minutes, not 40 minutes, it's more like 12, but he was doing a Minecraft video and he was calculating how many diamonds you can get, and I was like, yeah, that the math was more intriguing to me, which is a really weird sentence to come out of my mouth. The math portion of this theory was the thing that was more intriguing to me, but I was just like, yeah, people really liked Minecraft. Like, it was like a thing. I mean, it's still kind of a thing, but like, I was never curious about it. And
Minecraft is not kind of still a thing.
It is a thing.
It's a thing.
It's a forever thing, haunting the lives of many people till the day that they die.
It's a big thing.
And we all know that, you know, I'm susceptible to addiction.
Yep. Yes, you are.
But I was just like, I don't know if I'll get into this, but I am kind of curious. And it was available for, I think, like $12. And I was like, Hubs, can I put Minecraft on your Xbox? Because I do not have an Xbox One. It's my husband's. And he was just like, really? You're going to do that? I'm like, I just want to see if I'll like it. I probably won't, and then I'll never touch it. And he was like, but $12, though. That's like...
You should really get an Xbox, though.
I'm thinking about it.
You should really get your own Xbox.
Yeah, maybe. I do make adult money now. I could.
I don't have to share. Yeah.
But.
Because then you can games whenever you want.
I could get whatever games
that you want.
Right.
Onto Xbox.
True. But long story short, he caves and he lets me get it. And I get it, and I'm like, all right, I'm totally going to jump into this, and I'm going to figure this out. And I think there was something wrong with the code, because when I first downloaded it and I got into a world, I couldn't... So at first, you don't have any weapons. So, like, literally, you have to go around, like, punching bushes and trees to get, like, sticks and, like, leaves and shit. Like, you're starting at ground one. Like, we're going levels, Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild. You came out of the restoration chamber, and you grab a stick. And, like, you got a stick for a while. Bitches love sticks. And I couldn't punch trees to get sticks. Like, and I'm sitting there punching this tree for, like, 4 solid minutes. And not a single chip is, like, falling off this tree. And I'm like, I set up everything for, like, beginner. The world's peaceful. Like, this tree should be, like, you know, stacks of twigs by my feet at this point. It's not happening. And, like, I was getting frustrated, and I'm like, fuck this game, fuck life, fuck Thursday. Like, I was not having it. I'm like, how are there kids out there who are, like, 9 jumping into this and, like, making fucking castles in the sky, and I can't punch a fucking tree? What? And, of course, like, my husband...
Right?
So my husband hears me screaming and he comes out and he sees me punching this tree and nothing's happening. And like he makes me shut it down and restart the whole system. And then all of a sudden, like, yeah, I can punch trees. So I was like, okay, great. I'm like, great. I'm going to go back to like happily punching trees. And I start building a house. But then I realize I don't have a map because I think I dropped my map. So I go adventuring to go find some better sticks and some better wood, and then I can't find the house that I started. So I was like, fuck this. Fuck this. I'm like, I'm not getting lost in the woods. What's the point of building the house if I can't find it? And like, I'm sitting there like, maybe if I die, I can respawn at my house, because I had a bed there, and that's what allows you to, like, wherever you sleep last is the last place, like, is the place that you'll resurrect when you die. But I had made a bed near this random river I found, because I thought that was smart, and I slept in it, and then when I died, I went back to that river, but that river was nowhere near the house I had started building. And I'm just like, no, like, I don't get this. And there are creepers everywhere that are, like, kamikazing on me and blowing me up. And, like, there's spiders that be attacking me. And, like, I don't have a good stick, so I can't fight the spiders. So I'm just, like, at the whim of nature. And I just couldn't get my head around it. And I was ready to walk away from it. And, I mean, now my husband has joined my third world because I want to set my first two on fire because fuck them. But, and we have been making steadily progress, but I still haven't found the strong appeal for it yet. Like, I don't imagine 8 or 9 kids all like, man, I can't wait to go into our realm after school today so that we can go mine and fight some zombies. Like, it just doesn't, I don't think I've hit the right vein yet in the game, but I'm going to play a little bit more and see if I can't find a pattern here or find the joy in it yet, because I still haven't found the joy.
Well, because I think for you, and
I mean,
and
like, I like Stardew Valley, and I grew corn and milked cows and like did interior designing in my house.
Right, but at the core of the things that you tend to like to play, creator games are not necessarily your thing. And that's really where the joy and the love is for Minecraft,
I mean, I'm currently building a house in my new world, though when my husband got into my realm, he, like, killed me and then put a sign in front of the house saying that I got evicted. And I'm like, if you want a house, build your own damn house. Like, I got very aggressive. I was like, I was halfway through the house. And he's like, I like your house. I'm like, well, go build your own damn house. And he's like, I'll just take your house. And I was like, no! I've been working on this for hours! Fuck you! But now right. We share the house. Like,
Yeah. He didn't really necessarily want you to put Minecraft on his Xbox, but now that he's there, he wants your house.
Well, I mean, you know,
there's such
there.
Social commentary I could make on that right now, but it's really inappropriate.
Like,
sure, yeah. The brown people move in and get the place all put together and,
well,
nice.
Like, I made like
and
a
then
big
the gentrification
house. I had
comes.
A basement. I like irrigated some natural water, so it kind of looks like I have like a hot tub, though it's like river water. But I mean, like, I have like a little bit of water. I have a little garden. Like, I haven't built my roof yet because I'm still trying to figure out how to exactly do that. But like, it's a building, and it has a bed in it, and like, I could cook. In my which is weird. You cook on your furnace. You don't, like, make a stove. I don't understand that, but I've made some pork chops. Like, I'm figuring it out. And then here he comes, like, oh, no, this is mine now. And it's like, no! This is mine!
You need to put up a sign that says, not today, colonizer.
Not today. But, so, I mean, I think maybe the more the merrier. Like, if you've got a bunch of people
yes.
working to a common goal, like, that's mm-hmm. where the fun comes from.
Part of where the fun comes from, sure. But also, if you enjoy creator games, I think.
Well, I mean, like, I'm happy with this house. Like, I was really proud because, like, I have no idea, like, how big I want this house to be. What kind of floors do I want? Do I want sandstone? Well, I have to go find sand and then turn it into stone somehow. How the fuck do I do that? I'll just pound it for hours. Let's see if that... Oh, it worked. Okay, great. Let me go get all the sand now. And now I can put sand in a furnace and get glass. So it's like, ooh, kind of deal. Something like this... There's some moments where I'm like, okay, I get that. But that's not what the whole game is. And I'm just like... Like, there's no tutorial.
No, there's a lot of levels, because, you know,
there's not even levels. Like, you start out in this world, and there's no tutorial. Like, you don't know. Like,
I don't mean levels, like...
Oh, like
progression.
Layers.
Exactly.
Layers.
Correct. There is co-op. There is PvP. Yeah. There is just straight creator. Like, there's a lot of layers to the game, and so there's different ways for different people to find their joy in that space. You know, if all you want to do is figure out how do I make other things so I can make other things, that can be your Minecraft experience. You don't have to do any of the other things.
Right.
You know, if you want to go around and you want to just, you know, capture creepers and build a dungeon for them, you can do that too.
I've killed a couple of creepers. I like to kill sheep. And my husband's like, you know, you can shear sheep for their wool. I'm like, yes, but I also need to eat.
And I have a furnace, so I'm making these pork chops. Do you want a pork chop or not?
Do you want a pig or not? And I mean, I did accidentally take out a horse, but that's because I was building the house and I built my walls too high and the horse couldn't jump out of it. And I was like, and I rode the horse, but I couldn't get the horse to jump over. I'm like, you can't live in my house, so I'm just going to kill you for your leather and your horse meat. Sorry. Don't fall in my house again. Like, my husband's like, you're a murderer. I'm like, no, I'm just pragmatic. If that horse is in the house...
Couldn't get the horse out. There's only one thing to do.
I have to feed that horse. I have to wash that horse. What is that horse contributing to my household? Nothing. Except his meat.
Now, meat and leather.
He fed me. And I was full for like 4 days. Because horse meat apparently is really filling. But... It's weird. Like, I'm finding the nuggets of joy, but, like, I haven't found a way to meld all the joy together yet.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I'm still fairly new to it. And, like, the fact that, like, kids, younger kids, like, the way that we grew up with games, and my husband and I were talking about this slightly.
Minecraft is this generation's Legos.
Yeah, it is. And, like, or rather, we were just kind of talking, like, you know, Panda husband would say, and he'd be like, you know, we sit there and we reminisce about, you know... Mario and Zelda and Sonic and, you know, and like that, those are the games that we grew up on. And he's like, but the generations after us, like, they're gonna be like, guys, remember that time we were in Minecraft and we found a diamond? And like, to them, that's gonna be like, hey, remember when I got to level 3-5 in Mario? Yeah. Like, the level.
Remember the first time you discovered the warp pipes?
Oh my god, what? Do you remember that first time I flew with my cape and did the boing? Like, my God, like, the level of passion and nostalgia was going to be so, I don't want to say misplaced, because it's not, because they're growing up with this. So this is what their nostalgia will be. But it's just, I think for me, like, thinking about that, I'm like, man, nostalgia takes on so many different faces. Like, it's its own chameleon.
It is, because it's based off of the person's experience. And their timeline.
But the feeling of nostalgia is the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
It's like the mirror of Irisid. Like, it shows you what you want.
Yes.
My nostalgia would make me want Sonic, and your nostalgia would make you want
Burger
Mario.
Time.
Okay, Burger Time. Sure. Sure. I like burgers. Who doesn't like to eat? Am I right? But, you know, or it might show you Pole Position, which in my mind sounds like a stripper game. But hey, whatever. Maybe that should be made on Steam. Maybe I'll make it. And that will be... I'm not good at that stuff, so that will never happen. But yeah, so I've been tinkering around in that, and that's just been... That's been a weird experience so far. But I'm not mad at it. But I'm like, I don't get it. I'm waiting to find the key that opens the door, and I go, oh, I get it now. I care now. I get it. And that hasn't happened yet.
Okay. But so you haven't got it.
I haven't got it yet.
But you're still trying.
But I'm trying.
All right, so I'm going to talk about God of War now.
Okay. I tried to raise the spirits up as much as I could.
Yep. Well, I'm going to pick them up the rest of the way, because I will tell you guys right now, I have finished the story in God of War. I am doing the prologue play, which is something that I'm really glad that they included in this game. Because like I mentioned before, there are these side quests you can go on outside of the core story. I mostly critical pathed the game. I did some side quests because I knew I needed to get my levels up a little bit. But ultimately, I completed the game without getting any higher than level 5. So there are a shit ton of side quests that I didn't do. When you complete the story, you are able to go back into the game and do all those side missions. So... completing the story is not the end of Kratos and Atreus' journey, which is super dope. But I'm going to talk about the end of their journey. So if you have not finished the game yet and you don't want it spoiled, stop listening to the podcast now. Listen to the rest of this podcast when you finish the game, because I really want to talk about it. I will say this right now. This God of War game is probably the most enjoyable game that I have played this year. If I was to vote on 2018 games right now, this game would be my game of the year. The story all the way through is fantastic. The character development all the way through this game is fantastic. The gameplay mechanics all the way through this game, absolutely fantastic. So where I had left off when we last talked about God of War was that I was journeying with Atreus to basically take my wife, Kratos' wife's, Faye's, ashes to Jotunheim, which is the land of the giants. We had met the world serpent, which was the giant snake who was so big he wrapped around the earth, Jormungandr. And Jormungandr is so massive in the game. Like, when you first meet Jormungandr, it's just this bombastic moment. I have a very nice sound system on my TV, and Jormungandr speaks so much that it rumbled my living room. It disturbed my dog. My dog thought that there was somebody at the door and went on high alert. It's the only time she puts her tail up. It was like when she's like, exclamation point, I am alert.
She's
danger,
trying to protect
danger.
You.
Exactly.
They're humans. They're sound.
I'm alerting you. It's the only time she puts her tail up, right? So anyway, as you progress in the game, I'm just going to talk from the point of that to the end of the game. You're basically through the story on a journey of Kratos and Atreus really developing their father-son relationship. And it goes through the turns that you kind of expect would happen for a parent who hasn't been as connected with their child trying to build a relationship. So they have a lot of bumps and bruises along the way. You eventually encounter a character named Mimir, just when it seems like you're actually coming up on, like, the end point of the game, where you're right in front of the gate to Jotunheim. And Mimir is basically a seer and used to be an advisor to Odin. Through another fight, surprise, surprise, with Magni and Modi, you end up, or is it Baldur? It's one of those. You break the gate to Jotunheim and you have to find an alternative way to get there. And so you end up chopping Mimir's head off because he's trapped in a tree by Odin. Mm-hmm. And initially, Kratos doesn't really want to do it and asks him if he's sure. And he's like, look, in a very real and deep way, that's almost kind of disturbing, quietly tells Kratos that every day Odin tortures him and finds new ways to be more vicious and cruel every day. So when Kratos chops his head off, if they're not able to get the witch, who ends up being Freya, that you meet in the woods, to reanimate his head, what he's doing now is not living, so he's okay with it.
Whoa.
Okay. Then he starts talking some shit that makes Kratos uncomfortable, because Mimir can tell immediately that Kratos is a god, which means Atreus is part god, and he also knows that Atreus doesn't know that he's part god, so he starts talking some shit, and Kratos is like, alright, well, I'm gonna cut your head off now.
It's like, hey, buddy.
Because you need to be quiet, so choppity-chop-chop. Chop-plop-plop-plop-plop. And from that point, once you are able to do a mission, get to Freya, you're able to reanimate Mimir's head, Mimir now becomes commentary character, because you're carrying his now live head on your hip. And the game becomes very interesting, because as you're traversing places, like going out onto the Lake of Nine or traveling between, you know, start points for side missions or missions, Mimir starts telling tales of the Norse gods and experiences that he's had with Odin and with Thor, and giving you all this really interesting context to this world that you're in. You know, the stuff that kind of Destiny put in the grimoire that nobody read, Mimir actually tells those stories. So, like, every time you're on a boat for a long period of time with Atreus, Mimir will start telling Atreus a story. And Kratos will give color commentary on it, but that's how you learn about what happened with Freya and Odin, and you learn why Freya became referred to as Frigg. So you learn that Frigg and Freya are the same person in the space. You get tales of, you know, the battles to happen or that have happened with Jormungandr and Thor. And it's just this really nice balance of storytelling, and they're really well told. The voice actor for Mimir is fantastic. The pacing is fantastic. And he, at times, is almost acts like a conscious voice for Kratos.
Okay.
And at other times, is acting as comic relief. Like, there's a point where, during a fight, after killing Magni, who is voiced by Troy Baker. So, Thor's sons, Magni and Modi, are voiced by Troy Baker and Nolan North, which is fantastic. There's a fight with Modi that happens where it looks like he's got Kratos on the ropes. And Atreus tries desperately to save his dad because they're at the point where their relationship is getting really good. They've actually been talking a little bit more about everything that's going on in the world. And Atreus up to this point has been very naive. You know, it really wrecked him the first time he had to kill a person. You know, there's a point where he talks about, you know, I get killing an animal because they're food, but people are just trying to live and be happy, and they should be killed.
People can be food too, Atreus. Like, you could, I mean,
How to Serve Man can either be a humanitarian book or a cookbook. Anyway.
I mean, humans are called long pork.
Okay, all right, let's keep it moving. So anyway, but Atreus wants desperately to help his father, and he gets so enraged because Modi starts talking shit about his mom that you see for a second this flash of red, and then he passes out.
Ooh.
And it looks like he was going into Spartan rage. And, I mean, he just drops to the ground, and, like, Kratos loses it. He goes into Spartan rage, gets loose, takes it to Modi. Modi runs off before making the comment of, like, oh, it looks like I broke him. And Kratos then immediately grabs the boy, and Mimir's like, you gotta get him to Freya. Only she can help him. So you get in the boat, and you lay Atreus down, and you make a beeline for Freya's house. At the point where you're on the elevator, which is like the longest elevator ride ever, Kratos, holding Atreus's body, starts nervously pacing back and forth on the elevator. And it's the first time ever in any God of War game that you've ever seen Kratos acting nervous and being vulnerable. It's the first moment where, like, I became emotional in the game. Because when he finally makes it to Freya, he's, like, frantically yelling at her door. And she's like, I'm still a god. And he's like, the boy is ill. You've got to help. And she comes rushing to the door. And he's like, he's ill. And, like, his eyes are wide open. And you can, like, see fear for the first time ever in this character. And because I've played so many games with this character where that's never been anything that has been on Kratos, like, even when he was examining his own conscience and fighting himself before he could go and fight his dad, he was never afraid. There's a moment where she's just like, I think I can heal him, but you've got to go to hell, and you've got to get this, the Guardian's heart, but, like, he might survive, but still, like, you're going to have to tell him what he is and what the deal is. And Kratos just looks up wide-eyed while gently holding Atreus's head and looks at Freya and is just like, will you help me? And says it in the most frail, vulnerable, somewhat broken way. Like the voice actor for Kratos did just such a fantastic job. Like, it broke me a little on the inside. Like, I almost cried a little bit.
I think deep down, because we knew the Kratos before had been a loving husband, because, you know, I don't think you have the type of break that he has by being tricked to kill your wife and your daughter, that you weren't sensitive and vulnerable, like, in that. So I think we always knew deep down the Kratos that we saw is a Kratos of Ares's design, and it wasn't the Kratos before. So who's to say that this nurturing aspect that we're seeing in Kratos now isn't just him revisiting him before his incident?
Well, I think really, as you get through the game, it really is a journey of Kratos becoming more human. Mm-hmm. Because he really wasn't able to be human. Kratos, in his entire life, has been angry at the gods. You know, his life wasn't easy and great when he was a child, but at least, you know, he had his brother and he had his mother. And then he didn't. Ares came and took his brother, believing that his brother was the one that was prophesied to kill him, when it actually was Kratos, and stole his brother and was going to kill Kratos. And it was only because Athena intervened that Ares didn't kill Kratos. At that same point, that's when Kratos' mother was also kidnapped. And so from 8 or 9, Kratos has not had family nor nurture. Has only had on his mind that the gods are evil because they take everything. They took his brother. They took his mother. He believed them to be dead. Instead, his brother was basically imprisoned in hell, doomed to relive horrible tortures all the time. His mother was put into isolation, and when he finally was able to find her, she was like, "You're gonna have to be the one." And then she morphed, and he had to kill her in order to free her. His brother ends up helping him wipe out some of the gods, but dies in the process. So he's lost everything. The wife and child that he had, which gave him a little bit of sense of self and probably was pulling him out of the rage place that he was, similar to the way that Faye and Atreus have done it for him in this journey. Ares saw it as weakness and therefore tricked him into killing them in order to keep his humanity from him and keep him this just killing machine, this weapon. And so in this game, your journey is much different because it is a journey to Kratos accepting his vulnerability and kind of returning to humanity. So you finally get Atreus healed through a very fun battle in hell, which Helheim is iced over. So it was funny for me because I jumped into hell and I was like, oh, hell's frozen over because of Norse mythology. Because in Norse mythology, hell is frozen, ridiculously frozen. And Muspelheim is the fire realm, where in Greek mythology, Hades was fire and brimstone and all that good stuff. So beat the guys there, get his heart, take it back, you heal the boy, and you finally tell him that you're a god, and so he's a god. And then the next part of the game, next two missions really, are the most annoying missions for anybody that either has a sibling or is a parent. Because basically, Atreus goes through puberty, adolescence, as a god, and becomes a massive douche.
No.
Okay, up until that point, he's been, like, sweet and naive and want to save things and be helpful and is always telling Kratos to be like, no, you shouldn't be like that, father. You don't care about stuff. You should help people. And then he's like, I'm a god. So, like, you get to a point where, like, you meet up with one of the dwarves and he's like, oh my god, let me guess, your brother's not as good as you and he's inferior and blah, blah, blah. And
oh my god, that sounds terrible.
And Sindri's like, well, yeah. And he's like, we're tired of hearing all of your little people with your little problems.
Oh my god.
Rushes what? Off and Mimir's like, are we going to address that? And Kratos doesn't say anything. You go into another mission, and Atreus is like, I get it now, because, you know, we're gods. We can do anything. We can go anywhere, because we are better, and we know better. And you're just like,
Bitch, shut up.
Right. And Mimir's like, so yet again, we're just going to leave that there, huh? Right? So you get to another part of the mission, and all throughout the game, up to this point, when you're in battle, you have a dedicated Atreus button. Your square button lets you focus Atreus and tells him to fire arrows at enemies. And this allows you to, in succession, stun them so you can slow them down and attack them. At the point that Atreus learns that he's a god, you no longer can control him. He will just go off and run off and do shit. So he will fire arrows wherever he wants to fire them. Like, you'll walk into an area and be like, oh, there's an agent there. I shouldn't trigger him. And fuckboy Atreus just runs off and is like, let's do this! And, like, jumps and hits him and wakes up the ancient. And you're like, well, shit, now I gotta fight the ancient. I was just gonna skirt by them. Because the ancients won't attack you until you attack them. So you can walk straight up to them and be standing next to them, and they'll just like walk around you. But if you start a fight with a
serious fuckboy,
he just becomes like a straight up fuckboy, and you're just like, I don't know that I actually want to be on this journey with you right now because you're acting like a prick.
You're an asshole.
And so I had to fight this fucking ancient. I died, went back in, kicked his ass on the second time because fuckboy was like, roar! Like, he says different stuff every time if you die while he's in fuckboy state to start the fight again. And he's like, yeah, see, that was easy. And you're like, bitch, one, you didn't do shit. Two, nobody told you to go fuck with that ancient. I would whoop your ass right now if I could. I don't have a whoop ass button for you. But if I did, I would beat that ass right now. So you get to the end part of that mission, and Modi is like beat the fuck up. Thor has like beat him within an inch of his life. And fuckboy McGee is like, I think you need to pay for what you said about Mother. And Kratos is like, no, like, he's beaten Atreus. Leave
him. Like, he already down.
Right. Like, he's dead. He's defeated. His own father whooped his ass. Like, he's nothing. He also doesn't have a weapon. So, no, we don't need to fight him. And Atreus turns around and he's like, but we're gods. We can do whatever we want. And straight up walks up to him like he's going to kill him. And Modi's like, that's what I said when I did your mother. And Atreus just straight up ganks him in the neck.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Modi didn't say that, though.
And Kratos is like, I told you no. And Modi is like cackling, gurgling on his own blood because he's dying. And Atreus is like, whatever. And then kicks him over the side of this cliff.
Just like Daddy.
Okay, and Kratos is basically like, not cool, not cool. And so Mimir's like, you need to address this, like, right now. And so Kratos is like, I told you not to do it, and you're not listening to me. Killing a god has real consequences. It marks you. And Atreus is like, how do you know? How do you know? And Kratos doesn't say anything. And so,
like, I learned it from my dad.
Right? And so then, like, Atreus is like, whatever. And then, for the rest of that level and into the next one, anytime that you want Atreus to, like, fire his arrows to open up an area or things like that, he'll be like, whatever. Whatever.
Oh, my fine. God.
And I'm just like, okay, little fuckboy. Like, I was
wildly annoyed right now.
I'm like, where's my, literally, I'm like, where is my belt button? I need a belt button.
You need to whoop his ass.
Cause, like, you don't whatever me, boy. Right? So you continue on. You eventually get to a point where Baldur has found you and is whooping your ass. You tell Atreus to leave so that he doesn't get hurt. He doesn't listen to you because, of course, he's a god. He's like, I could do this, and starts firing all these arrows. Baldur captures him. Baldur then realizes, oh, I wasn't actually sent to get you, Kratos. I needed a boy because he's the brains. Stabs him in the arm with his own knife and is like, thank you, and goes running off the mountain. Kratos is finally able to break free, tracks his ass down. You have this big fight on a flying fucking dragon.
Oh.
Which is awesome. You end up in fucking Helheim instead of being where you want to be, which is on the path to Jotunheim, because Baldur was going to take your ass to Asgard for your final ass whooping, but you're able to hijack it in the middle of the trip, so you end up in the bad part of Helheim, which is across the Bridge of the Dead, which leads you to start having visions of things that torture you. So Atreus gets a talking to, like, Kratos drags him up by his wrist. And I'm like, oh, finally you're going to be a dad now. Now's the time you're going to be a dad. And basically cusses him out and is like, look, you're not listening to me. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. That's why the fuck we're here. So remember, as we go through all these trials and tribulations, if we don't make it back to do your mom, it's your fault. And that's, puts his ass back into place. He starts seeing visions of, like, what he did to Modi, and he's like, it's just an illusion, because that's not me. I didn't do that. And Kratos is like, see that you don't ever do it again. So he makes it very clear, like, don't try to play it off like you didn't do that, and that wasn't you. It was. So you go through these missions where Atreus has his awakening. He goes through his kind of, you know, teen years of back talk and bullshit, and comes out of it and comes around to it, accepts that he's a god, and you continue on, and their relationship gets better from that point. Kratos starts giving comments as Atreus levels up and becomes more helpful in missions. Your end mission, ultimately, is a final fight with Baldur, which, again, is a god who can't feel and can't die. Freya has basically put a spell on him, but that spell made it impossible for him to feel, and that's anything. So he can't feel cold, heat, pain, love, tenderness. He can't enjoy sex. He can't enjoy food. He can't enjoy anything, and that's been all of his life. And Freya can't lift the spell. But the arrows that she destroyed early on that you got from Sindri, that were mistletoe arrows, it turns out that mistletoe can break the spell. So in the final fight, Baldur punches the shit out of Atreus and cracks his hand on the splinter of mistletoe arrow, which releases a spell so he can start to feel. So then he gets all excited about the fight. Freya tries to break up the fight because she doesn't want you to kill her son.
Right.
Ultimately, you do. Freya then determines that she is going to rain down every agony she can upon your heads and parade your cold, dead body through all the realms. Which is going to be interesting because she's under a spell cast by Odin that she can't do any harm by spell or by physical attack to anyone. So she's going to work through other people, obviously. But she's pissed at you because you killed her son to keep her son from killing her. You start to make the final pilgrimage to Jotunheim. If you've stayed with the podcast up to now, I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't want the end spoiled, stop. Right here.
Right now.
So you get to Jotunheim after going through the belly of the snake, getting back Mimir's second eye, and using him as the key to open up the door to Jotunheim through the bridge, and proceed to go to the top of the mountain. And when you get there, there's kind of this lobby that has these murals and these stone carvings. And we learn through the mural that Fae was the last of the giants left in Midgard.
Oh.
So Atreus is part god
and part giant.
And of these course. Murals that are on the wall foretell the whole journey that you've been on in this game. And again, remember, Jotunheim was closed off long before Kratos ever made it to Midgard. Okay? But they show Atreus and Kratos on the journey, and there's a moment, because Kratos can't read the writing, but Atreus can, where he's like, this is our story. Like, there's your fight with Baldur. Here's where you met Jormungandr. Like, all this stuff. And Kratos goes, it's not our story, boy. It's your story.
Daddy!
Right? So, like, you get the feels. And then Atreus is like, look, Mother wanted us to see this. This is why she wanted us on this journey. So she hasn't been wrong yet. We have to trust her. And so he runs out of the room because he's going to the highest point because he wants to put her ashes out. And there's this flap, and you hear Atreus go, come on, Dad, we're almost there. Or, you know, the journey is almost over. And you hear Kratos go, yes, it is. And you look, the camera pans, and there was this flap, and it shows this panel that Atreus didn't see, but it's Atreus holding what appears to be a dead Kratos.
Oh.
Kratos doesn't bring it to his attention, just leaves the room. You then proceed up to the highest point. As you're proceeding to the point, there's a moment on a plateau where you stop. Kratos calls out to Atreus and says, you carry her? Because throughout the game, Atreus continues to ask if he can carry his mother's ashes. And Kratos always says no. But in the final moments, he gives that to that Atreus because he's Atreus. Been through it, he's earned it, and it is their moment. Kratos then turns and starts to take off the bandages that he's had on his arms, hiding the scars from where the chains of chaos burned onto his arms. Mm-hmm. And Atreus asks him what he's doing, and he's like, I have nothing left to hide. And so he unravels the bandages and lets them float away in the wind and has like this cathartic moment of him fully accepting everything about who he is and who he was, which is really cool. Then they complete walking up the mountain. They each spread the ashes, and they goldenly fly off into the sky. And as they fly into the sky, you can see that the entire skyscraper is littered with the bodies of dead giants. And so you realize that the only giants left in the world are Jormungandr and Atreus. The credits start to roll as you're actively walking back down the mountain when you finish dropping the ashes, and Atreus is having conversation about, you know, the whole journey that their mom put them on and all that kind of stuff. And then he goes, you know, there's just one thing. Again, really, if you don't want the spoiled, guys, stop listening. There's this one thing that I just don't understand about you know, everything that was on the walls in the Great Hall. And Curtis is like, yeah. He's like, the giants, like, when they were talking about me on the walls, they listed my name as Loki.
What?
No. And he looks at Kratos, and Kratos is like, Loki? Well, your mother wanted to name you that. I guess that's what she called you to her people.
Dang.
So Atreus is Loki. And so that's where the story ends. You make it back down the mountain. You make it back to Mimir. Mimir's like, all right, let's get the hell out of here. Any place that is better than this, it'll be warm. Why don't you go home and take a rest? So at that point in the game, you can either travel back to the gate that's at your house and take a nap, because you haven't slept this entire journey. And you've been through quite a bit.
I think you deserve a nap.
Okay, again, guys, I told you stop listening if you don't want to spoil it. If you take the nap when you go back to your house, there's a flash. Nope, there's a flash, and it says that it's, like, 3 years later. Because it is believed, because it is now snowing, when you finish this mission and you've killed Baldur, that you have now become Fimbulwinter, which Fimbulwinter is the three-year winter. Leads to Ragnarok. If you take the nap, it says 3 years later, Kratos and Atreus wake up, because there's this massive fucking thunderstorm going on, and snow is falling through their roof. And they open the door, and there's this big hulking person standing there in a cape. And Kratos yells, "Who are you?" And the person doesn't answer, but you see this bolt of lightning come down, and they move their hand off their hip like they're going to draw a gun. And you see this massive fucking stone hammer. So it's Thor.
Oh, it's Thor.
Then they wake up and they go present day, and it turns out that it was one of Atreus' dreams, because Atreus, the giants, can basically see the future. Mm-hmm. And because Atreus is part god, Atreus can dream and see visions of the future. So it was Atreus' dream that he shared with his father that Fimbulwinter is upon us, and in 3 years, Thor's coming for that ass.
Well, I mean,
So next game, Thor's coming for that ass. So we're probably going for Thor and Odin, because the Santa Monica team has already announced that in the next God of War game will continue to be in the Norse realm. So I believe it will be a continuation of this game.
Well, hot diggity damn.
Yeah, so it is an incredible narrative experience. Okay, the words that I have said have not done it justice. You have to experience it for yourself. It is really fantastically done. The camera work is great. The loading screens are great. The story is really, really, I find, riveting. And it also was very relevant, because for someone who has lost someone, the moments that they have where they are, I don't want to say indulging, but are in the moment of their pain and their despair over that loss are very real. They are translated very well. It is not cheap. At no point in this game is the game cheap. The battle system very much reminds me of Dark Souls, in that you do need to dodge and you need to strategically plan your hits and your counters. It's not just the God of War old where it's straight, just mash the buttons, melee, and you'll be fine. Enemies are punishing. When the more powerful enemies take a hit, you take serious damage. So there are some fights that you don't want that fight right now. You're going to have to come back to it later. And there's enough side stuff going on in addition to the core story that you feel fulfilled when you finish this game. It has been a while since I've finished a game and felt fulfilled. Really, the last one that I did was when I completed the storyline of Assassin's Creed. And I will tell you right now, as much as I loved Assassin's Creed Origin, and you know I did, love that game. Love that game a lot. God of War is better. The story narrative is better. So, on a scale of like 1 to 10, 10 out of 10, this game is fucking fantastic. The Santa Monica team has done an amazing job, and it's going to be really hard for another game to top this. I don't know that Detroit will do it.
Ooh. I mean, I think Detroit's going to be really strong narratively.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think that Detroit is going to have the same kind of emotional draw as this game. Like, there are moments where this game will gut you if you let it.
I'm not saying nay, sis, but remember, this this is the same dude. Company that did Heaven, you know, Heavy Rain and Beyond yep. Two Souls.
And Heavy Rain fucked with me. Like, yeah. like no game ever has. I'm not saying that Detroit is not going to be a great narrative and that it's not going to be emotional, but I don't know that it's going to gut me in the places like this game did, because it is just the story of these two and their relationship, and really their relationship with Faye. It is a very clustered, singular, emotional journey where Detroit has multiple stories that are going on in multiple layers.
I mean, but remember that they're really good of
I'm not saying that's not going to be good, sis. I'm not saying that's not going to be emotional.
They make it sound like they possibly give you an option where you're going to suck right, for $20 right, bucks because you're right. hungry.
But Beyond Two Souls, again, was a singular emotional story, because it is the story of, I'm going to spoil it.
Jody.
So it's the story of two siblings.
Well, an Aiden.
Uh-huh. And the loss of their mom and how they lost their mom in not knowing that it was in trying to protect them, and loss of Aiden in the physical space, and him being so beloved and loving of his sister was able to stay attached in a non-physical form to try and protect her so that she wouldn't be alone. It is their singular emotional story. What I'm saying is the singular emotional story, I think, when done well, brings you in because you're attached to those individual characters and just those individual characters. We really have just three people that we are emotionally invested in, and then the world is coming at them. In Detroit, what is going to happen is that you're going to have these multiple characters, because you basically have three protagonists in that game. And then you have the sub people, you know, like the negotiator mission that you run through the demo. Okay, that can end with you dying. And then that's the end of your story, very much like in Heavy Rain. If you don't succeed, that character dies and that character is not there anymore. Therefore, you don't have a continuation of that singular relationship. So all I'm saying is that this game, because of its structure and its singular relationship, hit me in ways that I don't think that Detroit will.
Okay.
And therefore, because I've had such a visceral emotional reaction to this game, I don't know that there's any other game coming out right now this year that is going to top it. So I full on feel right now, like, take down the date. I full on feel that right now, when we come back and we're in December and we're looking at the video game awards, I'm going to staunchly still be in the camp that God of War is game of the year.
All right. I marked it up.
That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. So fight me if you finished it, but God of War is game of the year. Changed my mind.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see you in December.
Yeah. So that's what I got for you guys this week, and that's what Panda has. I hope that you enjoyed this podcast episode. We'll be back next week with more stuff to talk about. I've got some anime, both from Crunchyroll as well as Netflix, that I want to talk about, including an anime basically about a bed and breakfast in the land of the ogres. So there's a lot. Also, there's an anime I want to talk about a character who is suffering working a day job as an accountant, and her only release is death metal. So we got so much to talk about next week. I hope that you'll tune in. If you enjoyed what we talked about on this podcast, then please subscribe. You can get our podcast on iTunes on the desktop, as well as the podcast app on your iOS device. Just search for the Eshcast and hit subscribe. You can also check out our news and reviews, as well as our podcast on our website, electricsisterhood.com. We've got a bunch of great stuff that's going to be there. A couple of product reviews coming out this week. So definitely make sure that you check them out. There's even going to be video. We've got Let's Plays and other videos on our YouTube channel. youtube.com/electricsisterhood. You can hit us up on our social. We are at ESH News on Instagram and on Twitter. We appreciate all your double taps and your comments, so please follow us on Twitter. You want to get those numbers up, show people just how much people love us, so please follow us, subscribe, hit the bells, double taps, likes the things, do all the social stuff with us. Hit us up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/landofesh. Let us know if there's anything that you'd like us to check out a review, or you want to hear our opinion on. Please do hit us up. Let us know what you want to hear about, what you want to talk about, what we should chat about, what we should review. We love your feedback. We really, 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 really do. So please keep that coming. If you enjoy what we do, then please make sure that you check out all of the sites and all of the great content that all of the content creators that are part of our network are creating. And that includes our homie KBD over at B3Crew.com, hosts the No Borders, No Race podcast. It's out bi-weekly. He's covering and spinning all kinds of great music from artists that you know and probably a bunch that you don't, with a little bit of Japanese learning every episode. So please make sure that you check out No Borders, No Race. It's also available in iTunes and on his site, b3crew.com, as well as some great manga, anime, and video game reviews and news. Our homie HamsterMan2049 streams every Wednesday on Twitch, twitch.tv/HamsterMan2049. New games and old, typically at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can get the link to the stream and find out what he's going to be streaming about on our Facebook page on Wednesdays. So please make sure that you check out the post so you can grab the link and you can know what he's streaming. Jump into his chat, hit him up. Let him know if he needs to be looking in different places for different elements or rewards or treasures, because he likes that stuff. One of my favorite humans on the planet, Phil the Issues Guy, with Phil's recap and reviews. I'm so glad that Westworld is back on, because his first recap for the first episode, Banums Bums. So make sure that you check out Phil's recap and review on YouTube. Subscribe, hit the bell so you get notified when he puts out new episodes. His streams are fantastic. His recaps are amazing, and you can be part of both live. You can call in, be part of chat, and check out his site, issuesprogram.com, to check out his archive and all kinds of great stuff. And last but certainly not least, our homies over at nerdcrave.com, keeping you up to date with all the stuff that nerds crave, from comic books and manga to anime, video games, music, movies, and more. If it's nerdy about it, the nerds over at nerdcrave.com are talking about it. So, again, thank you so much for listening to our podcast, for being a fan, for being a friend. We'll be back next week. Until then, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And we are out.
Titties.